Hello, iterative marketers. Welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast, where each week we give marketers and entrepreneurs actionable ideas, techniques, and examples to improve your marketing results. If you want notes and links to the resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. Now let's dive into the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Robinson, and with me, as always, is the sincere and genuine Elizabeth Aaron. How are you doing today, Elizabeth?
I'm good, Steve. How are you?
Very, very well. We're getting into summer and getting into projects around the house. Have you done anything around your house lately?
We are getting ready to put in a new fence.
Ooh. Are you doing it yourself, or are you hiring it out?
The neighbor that we share a fence line with works for a fence company, so kind of a combination of both.
That's kind of convenient.
It's very convenient, actually.
Wow.
What about you?
We are doing some landscaping, and we bought this house this last year, and the front porch was really, really shoddily repaired. It's brick, and we are trying to find a mason to come help us fix it, and it's funny. You can't get a mason to return your phone calls, apparently, at least not here in Milwaukee right now, because they're all busy with bigger projects. So it's been a challenge.
So are you going to be taking this on yourself?
No. I am. I consider myself more handy than I should, but I think there's a line, and masonry may be about that line. So what are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about persona research.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I think probably before we get into persona research, we should do a quick recap on what a persona is, although I'd encourage everyone listening, if you haven't heard episode 3, to pop back and listen to episode 3, because we go into great detail about what personas are and how they can help you. If you're an old hat at personas and you're just looking to brush up on how to research them, then this quick synopsis should be more than enough.
So just to recap, buyer personas are fictional representations of segments of your buyers, which give you the opportunity to understand who they are, what they're trying to accomplish, and what's influencing their buying decision. And that's going to give you the ability to see the world through their eyes and give you the opportunity to empathize with them, which is going to help set you apart from your competitors.
And we have a great blog post out on iterativemarketing.net that goes through personas in detail as well. And we have a template that you can download that would actually be really helpful in executing this process as we're going to outline it today. When we talk about personas, usually we'll split up B2C and B2B personas. And the research methods we talk about today apply to both, although some of them apply really more exclusively to B2B more than they would to B2C.
I think that's a great point to make. Do we want to get in and recap any of the benefits of personas before we jump into some of the different sources of information and how to use them?
I think so, because as you're going through that research, I think it's always good to kind of have your eye on the prize. And why are we doing this? What are the benefits? What would you say is the biggest benefit in your experience as we've done personas for our clients?
I think it's hard to pick just one. But the first one that pops up in my head is the shared vocabulary. I know it makes the conversation a heck of a lot easier when I can just say, "Hey, we're targeting Billy," and everybody on the team knows exactly who Billy is, what's, what his interests are, what his fears are, and, how we can best connect with him.
Yeah, I would agree. It's that or maybe the focus that personas give you, because if you're doing it well, you're now structuring everything around these personas. So every bit of collateral, every ad, every blog post, it has a target persona in mind, which makes it written with the intent of somebody consuming it, right? And then you can do the same thing with the media and really laser focus on how you're reaching a given audience once you understand who that is, and you can build all of that around that shared vocabulary of personas.
Mm-hmm. And I think that just leads into, I mentioned it earlier, but understanding who they are gives you the ability to empathize with them. But then it also helps you to set up some of your other marketing efforts, the personalization and the automation that so many of us have incorporated into our marketing strategy.
Well, you and I touched base before the podcast, and I think we came up with, is it seven or eight? eight or so different sources that we use when we pull together our personas. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll just rattle these off one at a time here and kind of get into how we use these different sources, some things to watch out for, and the pros and cons, because at the end of the day, you're going to have to pull information from a lot of different places in order to create that entire picture that is not only accurate enough, but also broad enough that you can really feel like you can get inside that persona's head and really empathize with them.
And to your point earlier, some of these are going to apply more to B2B than B2C, but as you're going through, you're going to kind of get a feel for which ones feel right and are going to help you accomplish your goals. We do have a great blog post about this that summarizes all of these different research methods and then goes into a little bit more extensive detail on some of the social media ones. And so we will definitely link to that in the show notes.
So the first and most important source in my mind is institutional knowledge. And when we say institutional, we mean your sales, your customer service team, anybody who's on the front lines interacting with your customers. Why is that most important? And I think it's probably from two reasons. One, that group is the group that you want to be using these personas as their vernacular moving forward. It really eases the communications between marketing and sales, marketing and customer service, and even customer service and sales, if you're able to say that, oh yeah, we were talking to a Jenny the other day and such, right? Mm-hmm. And so getting them involved in the process early really helps getting their buy-in in the process and gives them a sense of ownership over these personas that then increases the probability that they get adopted by the entire organization and don't just stay stuck in the silo of marketing.
And I think, I can't imagine doing persona research and not relying on institutional knowledge. To me, it's really where you start. It's definitely the starting point in getting this process going and making sure that you're on the right path. Unfortunately, there are companies out there that when they go into persona development, they don't include their sales team or they don't include their frontline team members. And I think that's where you really make a big mistake and run into having some major issues in the future by not getting them involved.
This stuff isn't going to be written down anywhere. At least it hasn't been in any organization I've worked with. And so it's really a matter of getting these folks around the table and picking their brain and finding out what they know. And we'll talk more about that process later in the podcast. But the key is to get those folks on the front line as one of your primary resources of information as you pull together your personas.
A few things to keep in mind when you are working with your internal teams, making sure that the information is current. Sometimes we've had people that have been in organizations for a long time and they've got some out of date information or ideas about who customers may be. The other one is biases that they may have. And we've run into this a few times when you've got someone who, based on their role or in terms of sales, based on their territory, may have a very small view of who this customer is, and it may not be taking other aspects and features into account. And so those are a couple of biases that you want to be aware of when you're talking to your internal team members.
The second most frequent tool that we use is probably social media profiles. Mm-hmm. The way that you go about using these is you go in and you have a pretty robust CRM system, right? That has a whole list of your existing customers and prospects. And ideally, you can start to segment that based on who would be in, who would be out of a given persona. And then you just start pulling up their social media profiles and taking a look at what they've completed for their background, how they describe themselves, what are they talking about, what are they responding to, and see if you can get an understanding of what's really important in their world, at least digitally and online.
Yes, and we use LinkedIn on the B2B side is probably one of the strongest tools that we use, and I think the second place I go when I start doing persona research myself. Twitter kind of has a nice crossover between business to business and business to consumer audiences, and then Facebook has a tendency, from what I've seen, and I don't know if you have a different experience, Steve, but that has more of a B2C focus.
Yeah, absolutely. You can certainly fill in some commonalities that you might have among an audience, but generally you're going to be looking at Facebook primarily when you're targeting B2C. Some of the issues that we've seen in using social media as one of our primary research means is that particularly with B2B, you end up with a little bit of a bias around your more digitally connected audience, because in certain segments, certain audiences, particularly with older personas, those non-digitally connected folks either have a virtually blank LinkedIn profile, or aren't even on the social network. And that can result in your research bending a little bit more towards the digitally connected consumer. So you have to be careful of that.
Another research method I use, and I've got to be careful here because I really like personas. I really like persona research, so I think they're all my favorites. But I really like relying on trade publications and business media. And, you know, these are publications like Fortune, Harvard Business Review, Inc. And finding within these publications articles on trending topics, concerns, pain points, aspirations. These are all things that can be found. And it's as simple, literally, I have typed in pain points of engineers before, and the articles that come up, provide a wealth of information to help me kind of complete some of these personas and put the research together. Another thing I really like about trade publications is a lot of times when you're within specific industries, they will do individual profiles or spotlights on roles. So they may have, again, referring to engineers, engineer of the month, or they may have awards. And so they're highlighting people within that field where a lot of time there's insights into why they became an engineer, the things that are keeping them up at night, the things that they love about their job, the things they don't love about their job. And so this is kind of a unique perspective that you may not get from some of your other research.
This works really well. Obviously, this is tailored more towards your B2B. You're not going to be able to find a top pain points of stay-at-home moms, maybe, but a lot of your other audiences, you probably won't be able to Google and get industry articles on if you're in a B2C target. And they're not always available either. But when they are, and you have one of those interviews of somebody outlining the day in their life, it can be really helpful for filling in some gaps that would be otherwise very hard to figure out without doing a ton of interviewing or first party research.
Some of the things I've run into is that it's not consistent from industry to industry, or to your point, between B2B and B2C. And then also there's a tendency to have some herd bias, and that you're getting, the publication has decided that this is a hot topic, and so the readers have decided it's a hot topic, when in reality, it's not something that they're necessarily dealing with in their day-to-day lives or their daily tasks. And so, again, just another bias to be aware of as you are going through the data.
Next up, I think, is web and social analytics. It's amazing when you start digging into Google Analytics or into Facebook Analytics and start looking at who your audience is and how they're made up, the number of little insights you can glean. I know that we've noticed that there's clusters geographically of people that we weren't expecting. You can pretty well narrow the age range to decide exactly how old your persona should be. There's a lot of advantages to being able to pull this out. Even some interests can be surfaced that you wouldn't expect to be consistent among a given persona. The challenge here is that you have to be able to get at those analytics already segmented or grouped into the persona that you're targeting, right? So if you aren't already segmenting your traffic in a way that you can narrow the focus so you're only looking at the demographics of that audience, then this method of research may or may not be all that helpful for you.
And also, I think it's important to note this is another area where there could potentially be a digital bias. You may have people who are cookied and people who aren't. And since this is all data based on cookies, you may not necessarily be getting a full picture.
The benefit is it's structured, it's quantitative data, and when it comes to persona research, we don't get a whole lot of that, so we'll take it where we can get it, right?
Definitely.
What about social communities? I know, Elizabeth, you've used those in the past.
Yeah, and social communities are one that I have a tendency to use sort of as I get towards my tail end of my research. And that's because some of the first few methods that we've talked about can kind of help give you some parameters to search for. And then once you have sort of an idea, you can do some more targeted searches in places like Quora and Reddit, industry forums. These are all great places where you can either go in and search for questions. I've even gone in and asked questions before. People love talking about what they're passionate about. And so you can get some great firsthand feedback from people that are the exact target that you're trying to reach.
Again, this ends up being a little bit of a bias towards your digitally connected consumer because your Luddites aren't really frequenting their industry forums or Reddit, but it's great to hear it straight from the mouth of the individuals that you're creating a persona around, and you don't get that opportunity with all of these sources. So one that I want to start using more that we haven't had an opportunity to use as much as I'd like to, mostly because a lot of the technology isn't necessarily in reach and you have to have a larger group that you're profiling, is Social listening. There's some really great tools out there that can help you build a profile of an audience on social media by aggregating a lot of information across the social networks.
So I think it makes sense here to kind of differentiate social monitoring from social listening. And I think we're all familiar with social monitoring. And, you know, it's monitoring online conversations about a specific phrase or a specific word or a specific brand. But it's you know, I kind of like to think about it as a snapshot in time. You see that one piece and it's not always necessarily in context. And that's where social listening kind of takes it a step further in that it allows you to quantify and filter the social conversation so that you have a better idea of what was triggering that conversation in the first place, what started it, and it helps you to really understand the depth and breadth of the online conversations that people are having about you or your brand or your service or your product. There are a lot of tools out there that can help you. You know, going after the freemium model, you've got things like Viral Heat, Mention.com, Clear.com, Social Mention. They have a tendency to be more keyword centric and they don't always store the data and they don't have any analysis. So while they may be cheaper than some of the more expensive versions, what you're not paying for with cash, you're going to be paying for with time as you try to do that, your own analysis on that. When you get into some of the mid-level options, you have Radiant 6 and Steve, you're going to have to help me because I always mispronounce this one.
Sysomos,
which a slightly higher cost, but you get a little bit more of that ability to analyze that information. And then when you get to the enterprise level, which to be honest, most businesses, definitely small businesses and even mid-sized businesses they're out of their price range. You've got NetBase, Infogy, Crimson Hexagon, and Zignal Labs, and they do everything for you, but you're paying for it.
And there's some really, really amazing stuff that these new tools are able to accomplish here. But the key is if you aren't paying for the tools, you're probably paying for the resources to do it manually. And when you start aggregating large data sets of unstructured data around what people are discussing and then trying to line those up with who is discussing it and getting that to align with your persona, it could be a massive undertaking or some pricey tool sets. I do want to give a hat tip to Jason Falls. He did a great podcast a while back on marketing smarts, where he covered off on a lot of the social listening stuff. Definitely worth a listen. We'll link to that in the show notes. Again, an area that we want to get into more in the future as these tools become a little bit more refined and a little bit more palatable, and the cost and reach isn't so, or cost of resources isn't so great in order to apply it.
And then I think the final two methods both fall kind of in the research, and we'll break these out as primary and secondary research. And I'll start with secondary research because primary research can be expensive. And so kind of an alternative to that is taking advantage of secondary research like studies and reports and databases that have been put out by government agencies, industry publications, trade organizations, commercial groups. Different types of agencies, they have reports that have surveyed potentially your exact target audience. And so you're able to get some great insights without having to spend the money to get that as firsthand research. I've used this a lot, in my B2B research.
So if the data exists, by all means, you should use somebody else's data. And the nice thing about a lot of this data when it comes from a third party is it's already quantitative data. It's already been analyzed for you, and you just need to take those statistics and interpret and apply them. If it's not available, that's the point at which you have to go and do your own research. And so here you have a number of options. Obviously, a survey to your existing customers is going to be the cheapest and easiest to do. But you're usually battling, you know, a small data set at that point, and getting participation can really be a challenge.
I think one of the other challenges with primary research is just the costs and resources associated with that. If you're working with a marketing research firm, you can quickly jump into tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars based on the type of research that you're conducting and the area that you're covering. And so that's, again, something that may not be available to all businesses.
Right. So you're basically, it's a horse apiece. Do you want to pay the money and get the reach that you need and get the statistically significant data and get the value that you need from that third party independent research firm? Or do you want to get some data that may not be as robust by the time you take the number of contacts in your CRM system and multiply that times the response rate you're going to get from such a survey. But either way, it's definitely worth pursuing one way or another if you can, and because that it's just another piece of the puzzle that you can piece together. I think that this brings us to a good point for us to take a quick break and talk about helping some folks. When we come back, we'll get into some basic keys to success and the process.
Before we continue, I'd like to take a quick moment to ask you iterative marketers a small but meaningful favor and ask that you give a few dollars to a charity that's important to one of our own. This week's charitable cause was sent in by Brandon Chalker of My Combine in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Brandon asks that you make a contribution to the Salvation Army Echelon, creating opportunities for young adults to engage with the Salvation Army and mobilizing the next generation of volunteers. Learn more at salvationarmyechelon.org or visit the link in the show notes. If you would like to submit your cause for consideration for our next podcast, please visit iterativemarketing.net/podcast and click the Share a Cause button. We love sharing causes that are important to you.
And we're back. So before we left, we went through a very long list of all the different ways you can go and research your personas. But I'd like to touch briefly on some of the lessons that we've learned, some of the keys to success that we've discovered, and share those with our audience. Where would you like to go first, Elizabeth?
You know, I think we should, we touched on this in I think almost every single one of the methods we discussed, and that's understanding the bias in the source. You know, understanding where the bias exists, no matter which one you're looking at, because there's going to be bias, and being able to recognize that and really, you know, take that into account when you're reviewing the data is going to help ensure that you've got a actionable and realistic persona.
And along with that, you know, you're going to be looking for patterns. You're going to be seeking to find where there are commonalities. And so in addition to needing to sniff out the bias, you also need to sniff out where you're running across individual data points that are more anecdotal. Our brains aren't really good at understanding when something is not significant versus when it is. And if you read a great story that you can easily identify with and seems to make perfect sense, it can jump out, even if it's just one data point, as being more important than three or four small things that you read elsewhere. And so it's really understanding this the significance of what it is that you're reading and whether or not it's just one individual little story or two instances of something among a sea of evidence that indicates something else.
And this has happened to me before. It's that one piece that really jumps out at you. And we did one for a client, and you know, I gave too much credit to one source that I read, and the persona was completely off. And so this is one that can really get you. So be warned.
And it's another reason to have a diversity of research sources that you're using, because oftentimes the more data you have, the quicker you can find the signal in the noise. The third thing I think that's important is that you're not going to have all of the answers. Even if you do a ton of research, you're still probably not going to paint that perfect picture. And when you think about your objectives behind that persona in creating that shorthand for the organization that is useful regardless of the context, and being able to easily identify with, empathize with that persona, it's important that you create that full picture. And so that means you're going to have holes. And in our experience, and granted, there are some people out there that would argue with this, but in our experience, it's best if you fill those holes with what you know. So chances are, if you've gotten 80% of the way there, you can think of two or three people that fit this persona to a T that are in your head, and you can pull from your own experiences to fill in those holes so that you have something on paper to then go and explore and refine in the future.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, this is something you're sort of doing at the end of the process, after you've done all of your research, after you've analyzed the data and you notice where you've got those holes. By this point, you've got enough of an understanding of who this person is that you can make those assumptions. And I think the key here, when you do make those assumptions, is that, again, this is a living document. It's constantly going to be growing and evolving as you learn more about your persona. And so if you put those things down there and they don't feel right, you know, test it, experiment it, and then go back and change it and tweak it and make it so that it is something that is right. And so it may take a little bit of time, but you will get there.
Absolutely. So what are we talking about for process here? What is the first step in the process of researching a persona?
So I think the very first step is some preliminary research. And this is the research that happens before you have your discovery meeting with your internal teams. And what it is that you're trying to do here is to make sure that you have enough information that you can facilitate this conversation and accomplish what it is that you're working towards. And this is true, I think, both for someone who's new in the organization who may not have this information just at the tip of their fingers, but it's also good for someone who's been within the in the organization for a while to make sure to go back and do kind of a check of, am I still current? Do I have biases that I'm not aware of? How does my understanding of who this audience is relate to what we've got in our database? And so, you know, looking at your CRM database, doing, you know, a quick look at your web analytics, these are great places to sort of get in touch with that.
Yeah, and then the next step is that discovery meeting. It's to get the front line of your organization, the people interacting with your customers, or at least representatives of them, around a table to talk about the personas. And those people are sometimes really hard to get around a table, particularly those really active salespeople that really don't want to spend time in a conference room, but it's worth the effort. You're probably going to have some feelings that you need to prep a ton for this meeting and have a roughed out persona to present to them. In our experience, that's not the right answer. And the reason for that is you really want this team's buy-in and you don't want to be too leading in the questions that you're asking and the information that you're gathering, because they'll follow, surprisingly, more than they should. So start with a blank slate and ask the questions that need to be asked.
And to help you with that, we've got a free tool, a list of questions that can help facilitate that meeting, and we'll link to that in the show notes.
One of the key things that you want to get out of this meeting, though, is understanding where the edges are between personas. When does Jim end and Jack begin? Because your front line will kind of know the archetypes. They'll know the buckets to put people in, and you're going to further refine them later as you finish your research. But it's really helpful to get that from the front line before you start that research, so you have a rough idea of who of how many and which personas you're looking at. And as we talked about in episode 3, fewer is better. It's much easier to split a persona than it is to try and combine two later.
So once you've had your discovery meeting, you've collected information and you have the buy-in from your internal teams, now is when you start the research and you start using all of the methods that we outlined earlier in the podcast. And we also, as I mentioned earlier, have a blog post on this that gets into a little bit more detail specifically on some of those social media resources. But this is where the information from that internal meeting is going to help guide sort of the path you're going down. And so from that point, you'll have a better idea of which of those methods are going to help you accomplish the goal of getting together a finished persona.
And once you've done that research, now you have to do some analysis. And it's better if you do the research separately from the analysis, because if you're trying to analyze stuff as you go, that's really when those little anecdotal bits of story will jump out and take far more precedence than they should. If you get everything into an Evernote notebook or into a bunch of Word docs or an Excel spreadsheet, however you best organize this unstructured data, and then come back and try and recognize those patterns, you're going to be able to spot true patterns a lot more easily. As you go through, you're going to be refining, you know, is this Jim or is this Jack? And where does that line need to live between, you know, a set of job titles or ages or whatever your delineation is? You know, and in the past, when we've done this research, we've recognized patterns that indicate that things need to be split. You've got a great example of this with, I'm thinking of one client in particular with the buyers that we needed to split.
Yes. You know, we went in thinking that, you know, we're looking at a corporate purchaser, a corporate buyer, and that this was one person in the role, and it was pretty straightforward. And as we talked to our internal team and as we started doing research, we figured out there's actually two types of buyers. There is the buyer who is coming in every day and doing their job and clocking in at 9 and leaving at 5 and, you know, really just task oriented, punching the clock. And then we've got that other buyer who's more informed and who has a stronger understanding of the business and is looking for those cost efficiencies and those process improvements and is really involved and takes ownership over the process. And how we talked, how we spoke to each of those people, the ways, the message that we communicated and how we communicated to them, where they were getting their information, varied enough that it made sense that these needed to be two separate personas.
And there were other edges that allowed us to feasibly target those two individually, because if you can't if you can't break people up into two different personas, sometimes it's not worth splitting. But in this case, we knew how we could get at persona, the one that was a little bit more involved versus the one that was checked out based on the type of company they worked at or what they did. So once you've done your analysis, then you draft your persona and make sure that you label it draft, because it is a draft. It still needs to go through a bunch of steps, but get the stuff on paper and give them a picture and give them a name so that people can start to empathize with it. And then you call everybody back to the table for a refinement meeting.
Yes. And, I think it's important to note going into this, if they come in and they tear it apart, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Remember, we're trying to get to an accurate picture of this group that we're trying to target. However, I found most of the time that we go into these meetings, when if you follow this process, it's amazing that, they have maybe one or two little changes or sometimes no changes at all. And that's a pretty amazing feeling when you're sitting there thinking, okay, we nailed this. We got this right.
Coming out of that refinement meeting, then you've got some tweaks you're going to make, right? And then at that point, it's just a matter of publishing a nice, pretty, 8.5 by 11 glossy persona. Now, keep in mind, though, this is a living document. This is something that is going to get revisited on a regular basis. As a matter of fact, the more you use it, the more you find out it's wrong. And that's a good thing. So make sure that you have a process in place to continuously be improving that persona.
With that being said, though, don't be afraid to share it. And we talk about this in our blog, Personas, the Great Brand Unifier, because marketing, management, business development teams, your research and development teams, sales, customer service, human resources, employee relations, they can all benefit from this persona that you've developed. So even though you may be making some tweaks to it in the future, definitely share this, because they are going to help be able to provide some information too to help you get more, make sure that that's on track with and becomes the fully fleshed out persona that you're looking for.
And that only benefits you. I mean, imagine your sales team is armed with these. So that means that as they're gathering leads at your trade show, they're segmenting them by persona as they put them in the CRM. As your customer service team is working with individuals, they're segmenting them by persona. And they're both noticing instances where your persona is just slightly off, and then getting that feedback back to you as they're interacting with the public, thinking in terms of these personas. I think that's a wrap for this week. We've actually gone pretty long for one of our podcasts. I don't know if we're going to hear about that. But I want to thank everybody for making the time for us this week. And until next week, onward and upward.
If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube or your favorite podcast directory. If you want notes and links to resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There, you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group, where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our username is @ITER8IVE, or email us at podcast@iterativemarketing.net. The Iterative Marketing Podcast is a production of Brilliant Metrics, a consultancy helping brands and agencies rid the world of marketing waste. Our producer is Heather Ullman, with transcription assistance from Emily Bechtel. Our music is by Seastock Audio Music Production and Sound Design. You can check them out at seastockaudio.com. We'll see you next week.